Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
It's 75 degrees outside, man. It's December. Where you stand?
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Owen here on podcast episode 76. On our 76th podcast episode, I had Cal Poly head basketball coach Joe Calero in Joe's off season. Coach Calero used a lot of golf metaphors the last few years to describe a season, and so I thought I would take him out on the golf course and see what he had to say about the Mustangs' upcoming season, their recruiting class, both with players that are freshmen out of high school and also a couple of junior college transfers. And I had this grand idea to ask Joe one question per hole. What ended up happening was that we got behind. It's interesting when you try to ask somebody a question that takes more than a minute to answer, and you're trying to not slow people down on the golf course, how difficult that can be. So we did a good job, I think, of trying to keep up. We got about 12 or 14 questions in the time it took us to play 18 holes, and then we finished up afterwards and had a couple additional questions at the end too. So hope you enjoy it. Cal Poly head basketball coach Joe Calero on the Fansmanship.com podcast from Cypress Ridge Golf Course.
Is that the whites?
No. I think it's Waffle.
Okay. So what was the most fun, most memorable thing you did this offseason?
I actually went to Grand Canyon. Early spring, down to the, flew into Phoenix, drove up to Flagstaff, wife, my daughter, and I looked at the biggest hole I've ever seen in my life, and climbed around there for the day, and it's been on my bucket list, and it's officially nailed off there.
You got it done.
The Grand Canyon.
Right on. Hole one also done.
I hate playing cold.
Hole number two. You have two new assistant coaches at least, or two new assistant coaches, and then you'll have a new DBO as well, right, this year. Is there anything that fans can expect to see differently as far as, like, how things are operate? Talk a little bit about Paul. Is it Fortier?
Fortier.
Talk a little bit about him and the promotion of Mitch, too. Mitch Reeves, too, assistant coach.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the fans are going to notice a lot of difference in the way we play or anything to that effect with new assistant coaches. I think that what you might see is maybe a different emphasis in areas that we recruit. Coach Lowry was really strong in Texas and in the Midwest. And
with like Jamal Johnson, Rich Shipley, Taylor Sutliff.
Exactly. He opened those doors up. We have those relationships now a little bit. But Paul Fortier may open up some foreign doors for recruiting. And then he's also an excellent postman coach, and I think that was critical for me to get as a big guy to really help Brian Bennett, Zach Gordon, Joel Alwich. Those three sophomores now really can continue to develop their post play. And then bringing Mitch Reeves up into on-court position of coaching, he'll jump right into what Mitch Freeman is doing, and he's going to have to take a large responsibility in really emphasizing what Mitch did on the defensive end and watched a lot of film with me, and we really came up with our philosophy defensively. So I anticipate those two guys, maybe some kinks to work out during the preseason, but by the time we hit conference play, our roles will really be defined, and I think we'll be very comfortable with each other.
You mentioned opening up some foreign doors. One question that I've always kind of wanted to ask you but never had like the place to do it or never seemed like the right time, what's your relationship like with the Cuesta head coach, Rusty Blair? He has a lot of foreign players on his team, guys who have gone to D1 schools from other countries in a lot of cases. What's your relationship like with him, and is Cuesta a place that you look and scout and stuff like that?
Yeah, I know Rusty pretty well. We go down and meet with him every year during preseason, take a look at his guys during practice, take a look at the kids that he has and so forth. And he's always got a player or two we look at. Usually it comes down to whether that's the position that you need each year. They're really hardworking. He does a great job identifying some international kids. And also his son does a good job. Casey has been down there and worked with the kids as well. So we have a good relationship with them. We haven't found the right guy that fits us at the time that we've needed it, or we've had another guy in position. We occasionally go for the junior college kid, but mostly we're focused on the high school kid to get into our program over the course of 4 years. We think that's the best bet for us.
Great. Our next two questions are actually going to be about junior college kids, so wait for hole three. So we won't get right into the JUCO kids, but last year you used golfing as a metaphor, or I've heard you use it a couple times. So why is golfing a good metaphor for basketball or sports in general?
Well, the biggest thing is that golfing is a balance of your physical game, it's a mental game, it's an emotional game, and it's something I don't think anybody really ever masters. And Tiger Woods was on top of the world, and now he's slipped, and then he's back up, and it's a lot like life. It's a lot like basketball, where, you know, it's easy to understand kids and what they're going through if you think a little bit more outside of just basketball. You know, I think it's important to think about golf as, you know, emotional stability, and you don't panic over three or four holes. And that's the same thing like the season. You know, you're going to have a blow-up hole. That doesn't ruin your whole round, and it shouldn't.
It shouldn't, right?
but the way I'm playing so far, maybe this will ruin my whole round.
Awesome. There are at least five to six new faces on your roster this year, that also means that there's guys who weren't seniors who aren't there anymore. Zach Allman was kind of especially a surprise for me, being a kid from San Luis Obispo. I don't know how much you can or want to talk about it, but what happens with guys sometimes when they come in and go out? There's been a number of guys kind of in the last few years who've been there for a few years and then left. And I'm sure it's individual reasons for everybody, but is that just something that kind of just happens sometimes, or what's the...
Well, I think it's actually part of what we call a national trend. It's
right.
You know, and I think it's good for any business, any organization to have some turnover. I think you have to have some attrition. You have to set your standards real high, and you have to kind of hold those standards. And you know, kids come in and they think about different things academically. They think about different things socially. They think about different things as far as playing time. They think about different things as far as how much time commitment it's going to be for them. And,
right.
And like life, not everything matches up with them. You know, if you look out in the world of work,
yeah,
not everybody stays all for 4 years at their current employer's position. If we had a large number of transfers that were kids that were starting, or, you know, three or four a year, we have one maximum two guys a year that may move on to other programs. To in most cases, it's to get more playing time,
right?
And we wish them well. I mean, we want everybody to fulfill their dreams, and not everybody's dreams are going to be fulfilled playing basketball at Cal Poly. There's only five starters.
Right.
There's only eight guys that are going to get significant playing time.
Right.
And if you don't get that, then you've kind of look at it. And I think the best part is those kids are choosing to go try to continue to play. In some cases, they go to junior colleges. Some places, yeah, they go to NAIs or Division IIs.
Right.
And that gives them a new opportunity. So we wish them well, and I think the relationship's using good intact. We just hope that we give them a good experience, but we also want to continue to raise that bar and say, here's the standard that you got to meet to get playing time. And, you know, everybody's different from whether they come from in-state or out-of-state, kind of what their goals are. So I expect that to always be the case, that one or two kids a year may consider it. Some years, nobody.
Right. It seems like it's kind of in the Big West, especially, something that happens. Maybe coaches, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but sometimes it seems like maybe coaches taking chances on certain guys, and then, you know, there's a lot of transferring in your conference right?
I don't think it's Big West
specific.
Don't have a corner market on that one. If
sure.
you look at it, the number of kids that I think at the high major, Pac-12, Big 12 levels, I think higher even.
Okay.
And so that you look at that, because again, it's a happiness level.
All right, we are on hole five or something with Joe Calero. We just tried to drive this hole, and it was a par four, and with limited success. David Wabe from Santa Monica Junior College is one of your two transfers this year from JUCOs. Tell me about him. What's his deal? I read something that he was recruited by Cal Poly out of high school, too. Is somebody maybe that you knew from then?
It was a guy that we had an idea about his game, and hadn't really polished it. We knew he was a great athlete and a good, solid student and a great kid, so we had recruited him. Didn't think at that time he was quite the right fit for us, and he ended up going to Hawaii Pacific and redshirting for a year. And after a year there, he really realized that he was a little homesick, and came back to California, played at Santa Monica, and had an outstanding freshman year. The great part about David, he's probably mentioned before, is athletic as anybody we've ever had in the program. but he's got 3 years of eligibility. And that's going to be great because he's going to be very similar to Sean Lewis in his athleticism. But his shot has really continued to improve over the last year. And as he learns our system, he will be one of the more exciting players above the rim, very similar to Joel Alwich in the sense that you're just going to see a guy who suddenly jumps 36 inches in the air and gets a tip dunk or a block shot. So it's going to make practices better. Our athleticism by adding Michael Bolden and David Wabe is going to be really important for how we improve during practices.
So we talked about David Wabe. What about Michael Bolden, yeah?
Bolden.
Yeah, he was the one that kind of came in a little bit later as far as the announcement.
He's really the ideal fit for us. He's got some of the qualities that we lost in Chris O'Brien. We really wanted a 6'5", athletic, long guy. Chris O'Brien was such a great fix-it guy for us. He could guard the point guard, the two, the three, and if need be, the four man. And he did a great job at all four of those positions defensively, and then he was real selective on his shooting. Chris O'Brien would have some big games, but he was just as happy and proud to pass the ball and rebound the ball. And Michael does all the little things in basketball to help a team win, and I think that's critical for us. He also played in a little summer league down in L.A. with Chris Eversley.
Okay.
And so two players are, by NCAA rules, are allowed to play together.
Oh.
So it was great for them to get to know each other this summer in the Just Say No League. Their team played in the semifinals of the tournament or the league down there. And
cool.
So they've created a nice bond relationship. They're living together off campus. And so, that chemistry is a big part of our team. We want guys that really buy into what we're doing all the way through it. So I think he's going to be a tremendous asset. I can expect for him to compete for starting minutes and David Wabe to be up there in the conversation. And we'll see how the freshmen do as well.
And Bolden's going to be a junior coming in.
Bolden will be a junior.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
He had a redshirt year in junior college and super kid.
And he was somebody that out of high school wasn't like, I was reading about it, going to Irvine Valley College. He wasn't super recruited.
It wasn't highly recruited at all, and he grew two more inches, polished his game up, and proved it through strength conditioning, redshirted a year.
Right.
So he's a 21-year-old junior, and I've always liked guys who have a little bit of life experience. They have a tendency to walk into these big arenas and say, okay, let's go play. They're not intimidated by anything.
So he's the same age and year as like Malik Love.
Yeah, exactly.
Point, right?
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, cool. And he seems like, whereas Wabe might be a little bit more kind of raw, athletic.
Yeah.
I was watching some highlight videos of Bolden, and it seems like the guy can shoot. He's a decent shooter, too.
Yeah, he definitely will knock down threes left open. I don't think he's in the category of Dylan Royer or what Kyle Ottister brings us or what Reese Morgan will possibly bring us, but he's certainly not a guy you can leave open at any stretch match. He will confidently knock down threes.
Got it. So those are two guys that you can kind of immediately bring in. And does that also take – we'll ask you about the freshman in a second, but does that also take some of the pressure off of the freshman too as far as needing to kind of come in?
Well, it takes pressure off him, it takes more pressure off Chris Eversley,
uh-huh,
having to be the primary scorer and rebounder. I think that's a critical part with not having Reese. We'll have obviously we know Kyle Ottister can score it,
right?
But it's also getting the guys that they can help with that after people really focus. I think people will spend a lot of their attention on Chris Eversley, so Chris is gonna have to find that open guy and get garbage points and post up points and transition points, and we'll get him with some screens, get him into space moving. But the nice thing is finding guys that can and will pass, can and will defend, and can and will rebound, and that's what we got in those two.
Right, you said the this team's going to be the longest or the most athletic, probably physically gifted team that you might.
Yeah, I don't think we're not going to be maybe as strong, because Chris O'Brien and Drake, you're really physically strong. But
right.
I think that the length, we're probably an inch taller at every position, but probably 2 inches longer and more vertical. So you can see more plays above the rim. So better get your season tickets now.
All right, let's see if this second shot can work out for us here on the hardest hole at Cypress Ridge. All right, Coach, we're getting to the end of the front nine here, and we're neck and neck.
It's only the first half, sir. It's only the first half.
You're already talking about second half adjustments. I'm a little worried. So there's four freshmen on your roster. There's Markel Leonard, Ridge Shipley, Taylor Sutliff, and Andy Raleigh from Mission. Sutliff and Shipley are from Texas, and Markel's from the Bay Area. Tell me about them, and which one of them maybe has the best chance of getting some significant minutes this year. Tell me a little bit about each one, maybe.
Well, Rich Shipley is a really good combo guard. He can play the point because he can really pass it. He's an outstanding ball handler with great quickness. Go online, you can see some great ball handling video on him. And then he shoots the ball off the dribble as well as anybody we have on the team right now. And it's really what we need is to add that, you know, a guy who can get to the rim, handle the ball, and score it off the dribble. So I think he's got a chance to come in and definitely contribute and fight for playing time. You know, if anything were to happen to Jamal Johnson, I'd say Jamal's ahead of him right now, seniority and experience as a point guard. But Ridge is going to compete for that time right off the bat based upon our summer workouts.
Watching Ridge play kind of reminded me, I kind of, and not to kind of pigeonhole your conference, but like I was thinking to myself, this is a little guard who can do a lot of things, who might have got overlooked because of how small he is, but a guy who can kind of still score even being that small, and kind of somebody who might have got overlooked because of that.
Yeah, he really can score. I wouldn't put him in the category of Casper Ware quite yet. But he certainly has that ability of some of the guys that we've seen in that conference, like the Green Kid out of Northridge. You see guys that can really handle the ball, shoot the ball, and score. So he's had a good summer.
I didn't want to say Casper Ware's name either, but that's kind of what I was thinking as far as like an upside.
You'd want kids to try to develop that into that level. Casper's having a great summer, has a chance that he's on NBA roster this summer. So we hope guys can work like that. And then the other second one from Texas is Taylor Sutliff. Taylor's 6'3" off guard. He can handle the ball well enough to get out of trouble, set people up. He passes it very well. He's got some good long arms, shoots it really well. And as he develops his strength and his length, understanding how we play defense, I could see him contributing this year as well as a freshman. I think those two are the most likely to get playing time this year and making that top 10 or top 8 or making that rotation to get it on a regular basis. Markel Leonard is a little thin right now, and really a kid that I think that down the road here, once Jamal's out of the program and once Malik's out of the program and once Markel gets a chance to spend more time in the weight room and support men time, kind of just understanding our philosophy, I see again really a solid contributor in this program. There's going to be some patient days for him as he learns the program, but it's it when I see that. And I feel like Andy Rowley's a similar situation as Markel. Because Jamal and Malik are ahead of him, and Kyle Oster, three guards ahead of him, and we knew that. We wanted to get more ball handling into the program. We wanted to get some more guards so they can start developing, start learning what we do. You know, you're not gonna be spectacular right off the bat. So if those guys can be patient yet aggressive, I think they're going to find some time down the road in the program as well.
Great. We're a couple behind, but quick question then for the end of the first nine. Who of the Cal Poly team this year, which one of the returning players do you think has the best chance of kind of showing like tangible improvement right away this year based on their off season or what you saw at the end of last season?
I'd say between Zach Gordon, who had a great spring and active, came out well at the end of the season last year. I think we were really confident he can give us a boost right away. And also, everybody's forgot, Malik Love is back, and he's been hurt, but he had an outstanding spring and a great summer. I think those two are physical, aggressive, and they're both really hungry right now.
Fantastic. On we go.
No, it isn't.
So you like your point guards a lot, I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over the last few years, you've had guys like Amari Furman and Jamal Johnson and
Drake UU
last year.
Right.
So this year, Jamal's back. He's a senior. Senior point guards are something that I know you like a lot. Last year, I saw some advanced stats like true field goal percentage and some other stuff on Jamal that really improved over the course of the year. Talk a little bit about him this year, how important he is to your team. You talked about him being kind of obviously the front runner to be the starting point guard, obviously. And which Jamal do you think we can expect to see this year?
Well, the best thing about Jamal is he's also a very good defender on the ball, and he'll get through screens. His assist turnover ratio was really good last year. The reason I think we ended up starting Drake and playing Drake was really field goal shooting percentage. And throughout the season, Jamal continued to improve that area.
Right.
Where he just slowed down and took better shots and didn't penetrate too deep. He was really forcing the issue. He'd get to the paint, but he was taking some off-balance shots, and his percentage showed that he was really off balance. His improvement every 3 months has been just fantastic. His leadership skills, defense, his assist turnover ratio. You know, he's the kind of guy that I really think other guys realize he's paid his dues. Because I'm very hard on point guards. They've got to really do a good job to be successful for him.
Right.
So, and then behind him, or with him, we can play him together, is Malik Love, who started as a freshman as point guard.
Right.
And so, you know, having those two guys, it's a real luxury to have a senior and a junior and a couple good freshmen in training right behind them.
Are you looking at probably two starting spots for the three guys between Love, Otister, and Jamal, maybe?
Yeah.
In a way?
Yeah, exactly. Those three all will get substantial playing time, and they know what they're doing out there.
Great. I found my ball. Yay. All right,
you really cannot get here in two.
We've made the turn. And I have a short question for Coach Calero at this point, along with the fact that, just to give everybody an update, I'm I think a shot or two ahead of him for the round so far. Chris Eversley, Big West Player of the Year candidate.
He's a shot ahead of two because he got a birdie on number 9. It was amazing. He's
not driving, Chris Eversley. Only.
He's driving the ball. Yes, not Chris Eversley. I don't know if that guy can golf at all.
You'd have to have some extra long clubs.
But going back to Chris Eversley, I wish I could golf as well as he played last year and his great spring and his summer. I expect Chris to have an MVP quality year. Whether he gets or not will be determined on his health, our team's success, and you know, other guys step up around him, so he can't be focused on too much. But he's got the energy, the heart, and the soul, and we expect huge things from him, and he expects them of himself. That's the most important part of his game right now.
He is a super athletic guy. You know, 2 years ago, his athleticism kind of came through in his sophomore year for you guys. We'll wait for this shot to be taken here. But next year, he might not even be the most athletic guy on your team as he has been the last couple
of
years.
Matter of fact, he probably will be the fourth or fifth most athletic kid. You know, I think Zach Gordon gets up higher. Joel Allwich gets up higher. Certainly David Wabe will be more athletic, and Michael Bolden will be right in his area. So that's going to be fun about the team, and that's what's going to be great for Chris's season, to have more guys around him that will take pressure off him.
So we've gone well past the turn now, and it's still neck and neck. I think I'm only up by one maybe after the last hole. Next question is that at the end of games towards the end of the season last year, you really went with experience, and that's something that's kind of been consistent for you, to go with seniors at the end of games. And that also meant that somebody who was a freshman like Brian Bennett in a lot of late game situations last year, because you had to have O'Brien, Royer, UU on the floor with Eversley and a ball handler usually. Or somebody like Reese Morgan, who certainly deserved it.
Right.
Brian was kind of the odd man out in a lot of those situations. His game, though, is one that seems like it's really, like, as steady as anybody's. And maybe I don't see certain things that he misses on defense or whatever, too. But it seems like as a freshman especially, I mean, being just consistently there, not really going on any, like, scoring binges, scoring 4 or 5 baskets in a row, but by the end of the game he's got 12 points and 8 rebounds. What do you think fans can expect from Brian this season as far as his next step in being a sophomore?
Well, as you mentioned, his strength was really his poise offensively. He got the ball. He was really controlled. He's a good passer. And he's consistent with his approach to the game. He's got great touch around the hoop. He steps out to 15 to 18 feet. You know, what I've been trying to preach to him is for him to really improve this year, he's going to have to improve athletically. You mentioned kind of maybe the area he needs to most improve upon is the fact that we got to be able to handle the screens, you know, on-ball screens or switching screens late in the game. And so, you know, late in the game, you've got to be able to defend in multiple aspects. And I think that if we can get him to realize how he can play long and how he can, you know, sometimes when you're big, you always play big and strong, but you don't play long and quick. And getting to learn how to space using his long arms to not let a guy get by him or get that foul, you know, having both of those skills in the same match, you know, you got to be big and physical. You can't get that foul, and you got to be able to guard a 6'2" guard or a 3-point shooter. So I think the biggest thing for him, the next one that we step for him, is to see him be as effective defensively late in the games as he is offensively during the games.
Got it. All right, Joe. You talked about going to the Grand Canyon and that being kind of a touristy thing you did this summer.
But what's your favorite like tourist attraction locally? Is it going to the beach? Is it going to play like one of the awesome golf courses we have? Is it? I'm a local guy, so I always like to get kind of the take from somebody, you know, who isn't originally from around here, but what their favorite thing is.
Yeah.
Around San Luis County, wine tasting. I mean, there's like lots of stuff to do.
You know, I think that we've done a little of everything here in 4 years. We've gone bike riding, we've gone hiking, we've gone wine tasting, we've played every golf course around here. Got to dinner, we got great restaurants, but I think that our favorite place as a family is getting out to Avila Beach. And there seems like there's a little something for everybody. You know, there's a place for you, and you can sit outside and have lunch.
Right.
My daughter loves the little beach down there. The waves are protected. It's a little less windy. You always seem to bump into somebody you know on a Friday night market. Yeah. It has a great family feel, and you know you can find restaurants, you can find the beach, and you can also, you know, find a little wine tasting there too on a Friday night. And,
yeah.
And friends and family. It always seems like there's somebody good to talk to down on the market on a Friday night.
From a Cal Poly Athletics standpoint, I don't think they're going to play at Avila, but I think they're going to play sand volleyball matches down in Pismo this year in the spring with the volleyball players. I think it's the same players, but they just brought on sand volleyball. That's kind of a cool deal.
It's very cool. I think it's another thing that kind of you put on the whole athletic department. It's something that we would use for recruiting, talking about, oh, yeah, we have sand beach volleyball. Our beach volleyball team plays right there in Pismo Beach, and that's a name and a beach that everybody on the West Coast has heard of, and now you get some photos of people down on the beach watching games. I think it's just a great branding for the athletic department, the university as a whole.
Awesome.
Life. Now you got to do some.
What's your favorite golf course you've ever played?
Ever? Wow, it's a big statement there.
Yeah.
It's always the hard part about that is to say that. Sometimes you're golfing and it's just the weather and the company. And I've had some unbelievable rounds of golf just with, you know, friends locally.
Right.
Just playing around here. But I'd say, you know, I've had a round of golf up in Seattle. There's a course up there, Snoqualmie Ridge.
Uh-huh.
And they played some of the senior PGA events up there.
Okay.
It's got a view of the Snoqualmie Falls up in the Seattle area. It was late August. Everything from the weather was 75 to 80 degrees, no, just a very, very light breeze, and I probably shot an 85. I had six or seven pars and a couple birdies and I think one of my brothers was playing with me, and I got done playing and said, I think that might be the best round of golf on the best course, the best weather, with the best group of guys. And so you kind of measure things like that, where at the time of year, you know, you're relaxed. It's August. It's just like this time of year for me. You know, I have about another week or two to relax, play some golf, spend some family time, and then get ready for the storm. Snoqualmie Ridge.
Snoqualmie Ridge. Check it out. All right. A couple more questions.
All right.
Can you handle it?
Should we act like we're still on the golf
course? No. We finished our round, and we're a little after our round here. I pulled it out in the end, the last couple holes.
Yeah, you're going to stay safe.
I birdied the 18th.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that was awesome. and Joe wants a rematch. This year you guys have kind of an ambitious schedule. You talked about it. It's going to be released pretty quickly here. If you want, I'll post this after it's released.
Yeah, that'd be great. So you can put it together.
I mean, I might have spilled the beans after the basketball banquet, but
that's fine.
But you're playing
as many things out there as possible.
You're playing Arizona, at Pitt, at Stanford, at Delaware,
at Oregon.
At Oregon too. Okay, I didn't have that one on my list.
Yeah, we just added that one. That'll be released here.
So you got three Pac-12 schools this year, along with Pitt, Delaware, Fresno State, Nevada at home, who was really great last year.
Yep. Santa Clara was top half.
You have Santa Clara at home as well.
They'll return the game here too.
Good. Yeah, that's something that I definitely want to ask about too, as far as like West Coast Conference teams. But talk about why it's important maybe to go play BCS schools on the road and go back east to play and try to do that. I know like there were some fans last year that said, oh, there's only like a couple games at home against, you know, like big D1 schools. But is that something you guys kind of have to do to improve as a program?
Well, it's three components. First of all, it's something we have to do to raise money for the program. When we play those road games, we get paid handsomely.
to travel to the Pac-12, travel to Pittsburgh, travel to Arizona.
It doesn't cost you guys to go back east, essentially.
Oh, no, right. No. Right. We make money. Right. I mean, for those of people that are following the state budget, I can assure you that we are doing our due diligence to supplement the budget in athletics because of our travel. So our travel is free, and we make a little bit of money. We're able to pay for things in the athletic department. We were able to buy the hoops. We're able to paint and, technology, laptops and so forth. So I think that's critical. We have to continue to improve the facilities of the program. It helps with that. But number two, besides the financial gains of playing that schedule, number two is the fact that we are getting national exposure. And I wanted to expand our geographical footprint and get farther back east. We went to DePaul, Chicago, but I really want to get back to New York area. I think it's good for Chris Eversley. I think the scouts from a variety of teams can get a chance to see him. I think it's good for us to have our name out there, the East Coast, from alumni base to anything else. There's not a ton of people back east, but I still think it's good for us. There's some, and people, I think generally recruits want to go back east as well. So I think that was a big part of it. And then the final part of that is I just think the tougher that we can make our preseason schedule and the more adversity we can put our guys into, the better we're going to be when it comes to playing in those major-sized arenas for conference playoffs, for an NCAA tournament bid. We made our first ever postseason Division I tournament last year. We had the CIT. Did not play well. We were sick, run down, and beat up. But you have to make those steps, and you have to keep on challenging your team to play, travel farther, play against better teams, be against more physical teams, and keep improving the program, keep improving what we've learned each year.
It's funny. I think sometimes people forget about that CIT bid because it was something that people probably could just watch on the internet. It was kind of last minute. I mean, that's how conference tournaments work. It's in Utah, so there probably wasn't anybody from Cal Poly there. You guys are all on your own out there, probably. What did you guys learn from that?
Well, number one, first and foremost, is the mental preparation, the physical preparation for that. We got done with the conference tournament. We knew we had a chance to go there and play a game, but we came home. We didn't have any practice. We turned around. It was the middle of finals week, and so our guys were literally taking finals as we got on the bus. We were taking finals as we got down to L.A. We were taking finals when we got to Utah. And mentally and physically, our guys were just drained. What we learned, a ton. We learned that if and when we make the NCAA tournament, there's another whole level of preparation it's going to take, and I think that part is going to be the most critical part, is learning how to travel after you've qualified for a tournament. Postseason tournament, you get excited, but then you realize, hey, everybody forgets, these kids still have jobs, they still have classes, and they still have stress that they're under to perform in the classroom. That's difficult. That's very difficult. So I think we learned a ton about the rest and the recovery that's necessary to get ready for that, as well as the preparation from the coaches, both from a scouting report and from just, how to what flights to take, what days to take, how much rest, It's a big part of it, and something I look forward to.
The women also made their first NCAA tournament bid last year. Have you talked to Faith about those kinds of things on the women's side, as far as, because they must have been going through the same thing you guys were going through?
Well, and they actually made, year before us, they made the NIT tournament, and they were up in Seattle, and they played University of Washington, and they didn't play very well up there. And I thought that was a lesson they learned, is just kind of how you got to be able to get into that. They're in that, the WNIT, I guess they called it, up there. And that's really important. Your team has to start learning and expecting to be a postseason tournament. Now, the schedule that we have this year is so challenging that if we can be over 500 going into the Big West tournament, be at or near 500, and we win three in a row, you're going to have 17, 18, 19 wins. You have a chance to be a 20-win team. And with the schedule, now all of a sudden you have, you start questioning whether we could be an at-large team. Based upon the preseason schedule we have, with the nationally ranked teams you have, you eventually got to put yourself in that equation, and you're never going to do that if you don't schedule those five or six hard teams of the year.
It sounds like, you still have Santa Clara at home, you still have Nevada at home, you still have some good home games in the preseason as well, but you got to start playing those road games to get those home games later on too. I'm sure. Speaking of home games, as a head coach, you know, you have everything in the world other to worry about other than, like, marketing your team, other than, you know, the attendance numbers at the games. But the attendance numbers have been kind of consistently rising over the last couple of years. You talked about having, like you said, the most athletic team. You got a plug for tickets in earlier. How do you kind of consistently get better teams to come in and play at Mott and kind of get that atmosphere at Mott? One place that I went last year to watch a game was at St. Mary's. And I kind of got this, like, picture of, like, what, like, a fervored, like, atmosphere with a similar number of people that you have at Mott every week or every game. How do you kind of build to something like that, like, where you're consistently there?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you have to realize it's a culture change. You have to keep on building the brand. You know, if you ask a junior on campus what they think of the basketball team, they're going to go, it's really, really good. You know, we were 13-1 at home this year, this last season. As we go into this next season, then that's a critical part. Is they see a successful team. They expect us to have good teams in here. They expect us to have a winning record. They expect that exciting excitement and builds. And so each year that you have success, it builds upon itself. I mean, the most important thing is developing consistency. When I took the job 4 years ago, the biggest thing I said, I don't want to coach a basketball team. I want to build a program. Program means that year in and year out, you're going to have a team that's competitive, a team that's going to draw some interest, and you're going to try to do a little bit different each year, who you play, what you're bringing in. But I think that's a big part of it. You know, last year we had Fresno State, and this year we'll have Santa Clara coming in. This year we'll have Nevada coming in, and it's going to be very and it's going to be very difficult to think that you're ever going to get a, you're not going to have Texas, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas come into my gym because we can't pay them that kind of money. You'd have to have $500,000. You'd have to have $500,000 because that's how much it costs them to leave their arena. If they host a game on their home arena and they have 13,000 to 15,000, 18,000 people, for them to leave, they're going to lose, $500,000. Right. So
versus you have to playing understand. Appalachian State or somebody random.
Absolutely. So you've got to try to do home-and-home games with mid-majors or mid-major plus type programs that we've been playing, occasionally a Mountain West team, that type of stuff. So, I think that to continue to build our fan base, it's simply doing what we've been doing, but doing each year. We have last time I was told by the SID, we've had a 43% increase in attendance. And I say, okay, if we can do that for another four years, we're going to have sold out arena every year. And season tickets are going to be, a rare ticket to get. That's my goal is.
Yeah, absolutely. And like sometime in the 90s, I remember coming and seeing you guys play. You weren't here, obviously, but sure. North Carolina State, I think, was here with like Todd Fuller, maybe. And I remember I made a point to go to that game. I was like probably 14 or 15 or something like that, and it was kind of a big deal. And I think that's kind of what I would picture your goal being, like as far as making it a big deal to go to a Cal Poly.
It was a great game to have. I've heard a lot of people talk about getting North Carolina State in, and they actually lost the game.
Okay.
But it was close. It came down. It was a one or 2 point game at half, and then
they beat Oregon State at home when they had them with Gary Payton.
Yep, exactly. They got Oregon State down here. And what you're looking for in those situations are a team that has to find a game late in the year, and that was when the people were going to Hawaii and picking up those games. Those are things that we constantly look for, but those are pretty rare. And, if you can get them, great. That's what, you constantly look at. We got Fresno State and St. Mary's. I think people may forget that St. Mary's, when they came in, were top 40 in the nation.
Yeah.
And you kind of go like, well, yeah, So sometimes you got to look at, the quality of the team, not just the geographical location. And the most important thing for us, without a doubt, all of when it comes down to the recruitment of teams that come in, are how is that going to truly affect, how's that really going to move the needle? You say, wouldn't it be great to get this team? But ultimately, you only put 3,200 people in there.
Right.
And if we are able to expand an arena and have a 6,000-seat arena or something, now you might have to, find and pay for teams to come in that are BCS-level teams.
Right.
But until you find those resources that you can, truly put in an extra 3,000 fans to generate the revenue for that, it doesn't make sense to spend
$200,000 to make $50,000.
Is that something that you're as involved in, like trying to grow as like maybe Don is? I know he's talked about a lot about facilities. That's kind of one of the things that they talked about when he was hired, even, is kind of this is something that he specializes in. I've been down to Cox Arena down in San Diego State and other places. Is that something that you're as involved in as he is, or is that something that kind of like he takes the lead on as far as the facilities?
Well, right now, I think that the reality is facilities improvement. I mean, we're just trying to make sure that we take Mott and, we need to raise money for a new scoreboard.
Another 10 to 15 years, right?
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to see a new arena for, 5 years to 10 years down the road. And Mott's obviously an older arena, but we can make that like a Butler. We can make that a classic, a great home court advantage like we have. But the realities are, state money, private money, federal money, we got to get real creative to find out how to build a new arena completely. My plan is to try to push that. I mean, I'd love to see it down the road, but I'm very realistic. I'm not going to see a new arena in San Luis County in the next 5 years.
Right.
But if we continue to have success and we can raise the bar.
You sell out games and then people start being more interested in funding something like that and saying that if you have 3,600 people at every game or 3,000 people at every game, then you know.
And we need to have women's programs supported at a high level, and we need to have volleyball supported at a high level, and we need to have wrestling supported at a high level. Now, we need to look at, is there a place for concerts to be on campus? It needs to be an event center. There has to be, a 5,000-seat event center.
Yeah.
Then that would be students would be much more supportive. You can have a 5,000-seat arena for, concerts and so forth.
That always bugged me about the event center when people told me that it was, like, just for students and, like, when it was first built, like, the rec center.
You mean the rec center.
The rec center, sorry. And like, the court was, like, a foot too short purposefully or something like that that they could never do anything in there. And I saw the Globetrotters in there one time, and they were, like, packed on both sides to the brim, and I thought to myself, like, but the athletics plays over in Mott still? Like, what's going on here? I remember, like I was in high school probably or something, and I had that, like, epiphany, like, what?
Yeah.
But there's nothing you can do as far as going back in time about that, and it's actually probably a recruiting tool, the new rec center itself.
Well, the new rec center offers, so many pluses: the swimming pool, the volleyball courts, the weight rooms, the jogging, the facilities. Like I said, we look at it all as a positive. And at the end of the day, we got to do our job, which is recruit, sell out our own arena, number one.
You've been coaching for how many years now?
27.
27 years. And so lots of teams in the Big West Conference seem to be like rebuilding / reloading this year. You have like UCI has a lot of new freshmen, like I think they have like 4 7-footers or something silly like that. UC Santa Barbara had a lot of freshmen last year who were really good, who are going to get better. And Williams, I think, is a junior this upcoming year, but he's a beast. Long Beach State gets Tyler Lamb on the court this year, right? So, and then there's others like Davis who are kind of on the upswing with really good players who just kind of need support around them, like Hawkins and so forth. A couple years ago, you talked about maybe your goal for the Big West Conference would be like get multiple bids at some point in the near future. Where do you see the conference in general? Obviously, you guys have a tough schedule. Do other teams have schedules like that, or what? Where do you see the conference right now, big picture?
I thought we're a little transition right now. We're kind of in a slack tide. I don't think that the conference is tide isn't rising up over the edge, and it's not running out either. I think they were kind of in a reevaluation with the Pacific leaving the conference and Hawaii joining the conference. Obviously, San Diego State and Boise State were on the edge of the conference and jumped back out. I think we have an opportunity that we're going to have perhaps a couple teams pushing the 20-win barrier, and that's really going to depend upon how we all do in the preseason. I know Long Beach State has a tremendously successful or tremendously challenging preseason schedule as we do. And I think that if you look at the top, I was told a month or so ago that in the last 3 years, our men's basketball team is the second winningest program in the Big West. Overall big win-loss record in the Big West in the last 3 seasons is Cal Poly. We have a second-place finish, a third-place finish, and a fourth-place finish.
So in my mind, we better get that first place going. We better get our conference title, and then that kind of propels you to the next level. And then maybe there's another team out there that's able to win 20, 21, 22 games with a challenging preseason schedule, and maybe we can get into the equation of discussing.
Right?
Yes, exactly. And we've got to keep on scheduling top 50 to 100 teams, home or away, or neutral sites, you know. I mean, that's big. We will play Pacific again this year. We'll play Pacific up at Oregon in the Oregon tournament. So that's another one. He'll play three games up there, and we'll also play North Dakota, which is returning 9 seniors, which could be the Summit League champions. So,
wow.
it's the most prestigious and most geographically challenging schedule that I've ever been involved with as a player, coach,
whatever.
Anything,
right.
You know.
Who's your favorite other coach in the conference? You guys talk to each other very much. Who's the other coach, maybe your favorite or the guy you respect the most out of all the other Big West Conference coaches?
You know, we have a group of coaches, really, that there's been some changes and there's been some new hires. I don't know the new guys nearly as well as I know the returners.
New guys like the Irvine coach and like Lass up in Davis?
Down to Fullerton and with Reggie over in Northridge. I've got a chance sitting in the stands and we chit-chat, you know, for, you know, 20, 30 minutes here and there about how things are going. But, you know, with Pacific leaving and Hawaii coming in, there's not as many guys around that you spend, you know, that much time, you know, visiting with. You know, Bobby Burton was at Cal State Fullerton for years, and Bobby was one of the great. Bobby Burton was at Fullerton.
Fullerton, okay, sorry.
Yeah, and Bobby Braswell was at Northridge, and both those guys are out of the league now. But those two, Bobby Burton has got an outstanding sense of humor. He's a really fun guy to sit around and talk with, and know a lot of his cronies with him was Mark Amaral, played for Bob Burton. So that's somebody that I would get a chance to visit most with as we hung out and talk about that kind of stuff. You know what? Most of all, the coaches, we all know we're in the same racket, and there's a lot of empathy, and then there's none. Even Bob Williams. Bob Williams was a really strong mentor of mine before I got to Cal Poly. I used to talk to him about how to build teams and programs, and then once you compete against each other,
once you're in the same conference,
you know, you're friendly, but you're not best friends.
Right.
And so I think that we have a great group, but they're real. We all get it. You know, I think we all. Jim Less up there at Davis. You know, we get a chance. I sat with him for an hour or two during the summer, and you know, there's just there's a true sincerity and camaraderie of empathy for one another that we can talk about things in July, but once August hits up, we're ready to start to kill each other again. You know, it's such a competitive environment that it's kind of like, okay, I'm friendly, but we're not best friends.
But we're not that friendly. And one example of that was last year at Santa Barbara when the fire alarm was going off, and there were I can't even remember the circumstances. It was just crazy. There was noise behind me that I couldn't believe, whether it was the fire alarm or the crowd there, and the scorekeeper was adding seconds or taking away a shot, you know, resetting the shot clock or something, and you know, you and Bob had words. But then after the game, you guys kind of both said the same thing, like heat of the moment, you know, people say stuff, and I feel like there was from both sides like mutual respect there. After the battle, what does that look like?
I just don't think that anybody who's coached more than, you know, 5 years is going to blink about what happened. You know, what happens is you're competing. I mean, when I hit a bad golf shot today, I might say some words that I'm not real proud of, but I say them underneath my breath and say them quickly, and you move on real quick. You say, the most important shot in golf is the next one, and the most important game in basketball is the next one, and the most important recruit is the next one, and the next most important coach is the guy that you get next. You know, even as we're hiring a new staff member, you got to move on. The art of coaching and the profession of coaching in all aspects is about learning and moving on quickly. I mean, you have to be able to leave the luggage behind and say, okay, next play, next day, next game, next coach. If you look in your rearview mirror, you're going to be miserable because this profession is unforgiving. Its speed is the speed of the profession, how things change. It's unforgiving.
Okay, deal. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com. Till I'm black and blue. You're